Man, I was thinking about my relationship with my wife, and we are madly in love. Like, she is seriously, I couldn't imagine being with anybody else, but she still has some of those things that are wrong. Yeah, anybody got one of those in your marriage? Let me just take you to a place real quick, all right? So, she's perfect in every way except this one thing. Like, she won't listen to the right way of doing things, right? So she believes, how many of you are make your bed every day kind of people, all right? How many of you believe that if it was going to be made, it should have made itself? Like, you, yeah, all right. So my wife is a make the bed every day kind of person. And she, I mean, it is like hotel level made, like 75 pillows. Good night. Who needs that many pillows? Am I right? If you want to take a nap, you better get there 10 minutes early to remove all the pillows, right? So tons of, and then she, this is the part, this is, I think it's an abomination before the Lord, all right? She takes, as she makes the bed, she tucks the sheets in at the bottom. Anybody a tucker in here? Yeah, you're all wrong, all right? So she tucks it. So here's the problem, because we all know that God gave us a temperature modulator and it's called your leg, right? And so if you can't stick that leg out of the sheets, you're going to be hot all night. So I get in bed every single night and I have to do this move. I yank the sheet as hard as I can, and then I turn into a three-year-old bicycle kicking the sheets, right? Can I get an amen? Anybody feel that pain? All right. Every single night. And she, like, the other night, I swear, just to torture me, she short-sheeted me. Ooh, I almost said a different word. She short-sheeted me. Short-sheeted me, not the other thing. So I get in and I go to pull the sheets up and they come up to like here and I'm like, whoa, Jenny. And I'm like, really bicycle. I think she like Velcroed them underneath. I don't know. you know as well as I do that that's really a little issue, right? We all have those little issues in marriage. For you, it may be how you squeeze the toothpaste. How many of you are bottom squeezers? Squeeze from the bottom, like, of the toothpaste. All right, so you squeeze the bottom from the bottom, the toothpaste. Sorry, I'm going all off rail today. Sorry about that. How many of you squeeze the toothpaste? Stop giggling over there. How many of you squeeze the toothpaste? I said bottom squeezers in church, all right? I'm sorry for saying it. For those of you who didn't get it, it's terrible. How many of you squeeze from the middle of the toothpaste? Anybody in here? Okay, yeah. Like, some of you believe that some people should put the toilet seat down. There are others of us called men who believe you should put the toilet seat up for us, right? Like, all the ladies are like, you are wrong, Kent. You're just plain wrong. There are all these little kinds of arguments that you can live with in your marriage and little disagreements about how to do things. And they're just little. You can kind of manage your relationship in the middle of that. But the problem is this, when little issues in a marriage, they get multiplied when big issues of broken communication, broken trust, and lack of care take front and center. You know this to be true, right? Like, those little issues that aren't that big of a deal, all of a sudden they can start to just multiply and get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they seem bigger than they actually are because the big things aren't being taken care of well. And so all of a sudden, even the little things start to seem to matter more than probably they should. And here's the truth. If we allow too many issues, especially the big ones, to remain unresolved, eventually even the little issues will just get multiplied into big issues. You felt this before, right? Like when you first met him, you thought he was really funny and his sense of humor actually drew you to him. And now you're like, you are not funny. Get away from me, right? Like, I've heard that joke a million times. One of my jokes is I pretend to not be able to hear you and I say something that kind of sounds similar to what you say. And I'm pretty sure everybody in my family doesn't think that's a funny joke anymore. And now I'm starting to realize when I do lose my hearing, everybody's going to be like, oh, real funny, Dad. And I'll be like, oh, I really can't hear you, right? You lose that sense of humor. Some of you, even the way your spouse chews their food has started to sound pretentious to you. Others of you, like, you feel like you kind of are just the doormat and you play second fiddle to everything that your spouse does. It's all about their truck, about their friends, about going shopping. It's all, and you just are tired of feeling like a doormat, like you're just playing second fiddle all the time. And so as I was thinking about how this can occur, how you can go from somebody who was in love, who loved a person's sense of humor, loved being with a person, to eventually hating even the little things about them and being upset about those little things, I started to ask myself this question: how do you divorce-proof your marriage? Now, let me speak to you real quickly, because some of you are like, Kent, I'm single, I'm not married. And if that's the case, that's okay, because the reality is all of what we're going to talk about today, one, it could be applied into other relationships, but two, if you are somebody who maybe eventually would think about getting married, or you could see that as a part of your future, it's important to think through, how would I go into that in a way that would take me into a relationship to be successful? Now, I also need to tell you that today, what this sermon is going to be less like is like, it's not going to be 5 steps to fix your marriage kind of thing. It's going to be more like, turn and go this direction in your relationships, okay? So if you're the kind of person who needs like check boxes, I'm not going to give you a bunch of check boxes today. But I do want to look at something about how do you divorce-proof your marriage? See, years ago when I was a youth pastor, I would do, actually, this, the kind of stuff I've been preaching on this month, I preached to our teenagers. Like, we would have conversations about physical relationships between people and what that should look like biblically. And I actually did a sermon years ago called How Do You Divorce-Proof Your Marriage for Teenagers. And if you think it's weird in here as adults, like imagine being like 17 and being like, Kent, we barely even date, right? But what my point was that someday those teenagers were going to get married. And it was most of them, what I was finding in my ministry at least, was most of them had come out of a context of broken families. And their families had been wounded by divorce. They had been wounded by divorce. And I was trying to say to them, look, there is a different way to do things. And if you guys could get on that path, it could bring healing. And so I'm in the middle of preaching that. I'm kind of trying to stir up this idea that divorce can be painful. And I'm talking about it. And I said, you know, some of you, every time a holiday comes around, you hate the holidays. Because there's this constant fight and battle in your family over whose house you're going to go to for Christmas and whose house you're going to be at for Thanksgiving. I said, for you, the holidays aren't the celebration time. It's just like the worst time of the year for you. And I started talking through all these different things that divorce can cause specifically for teenagers and kids. And as I was talking, I'll never forget. I mean, I can picture today. She was sitting right here, this girl named Ashley. And Ashley was everything everybody else would want. She was popular. She was pretty. She had a lot of money. Her family was pretty wealthy. But I knew that Ashley's family was divorced. Her parents were. And I knew that it was had been pretty traumatic for her. And so as I'm preaching, I wasn't thinking about that because I wasn't very sharp at the time. And all of a sudden, I see out of my eye, I see Ashley stand up and just burst into tears. And she runs out of the back of the room, and I kind of slow down the sermon, and there was this adult woman who was there who saw what was happening. I kind of pointed at her, and I was like, can you go take care of her? And so she went off and ministered and cared for Ashley. But what I found out later was, as I was describing all of this pain, she was going, that's me. That's my situation. I know what that's like. And here's what I want to say. Before we talk about how to divorce-proof your marriage, I just need to remind you of kind of this issue that divorce is painful. And really, I wanted to ask the question, why is divorce so painful? When most of the people in our world see it as a quick fix for the long-term problems of marriage. Why is it that that's the quick solution? As a matter of fact, my wife is on Georgetown Moms, which I think can sometimes, it's a Facebook group, it can sometimes be very positive, but sometimes not. And so if you're a Georgetown mom, don't throw me under the bus, I'll get ran out of town probably. They're like a mafia if you didn't know. And she said there are so many times where a woman will get on there and she'll say, I'm just done, I'm ready to get a divorce. Who do you know that's good? And all these people will jump on and just start helping them. Now, let me real quickly put a quick aside to all this, because some of you come into here out of a divorced relationship. Maybe that's even fresh for you, and you're going, Kent, what you're like, I feel like you're starting to step on my toes. You're talking about how painful it is and how hurtful it is, and Kent, I didn't want this. It's not the way I even wanted it. And I want to say to those of you who come out of a divorced background that my guess is that is for you, it's not what you wanted. It wasn't like, maybe you even wanted the divorce, but it wasn't something that you went into the relationship. Tell me, does anybody know somebody who went into a relationship and they're like, I just love them. Like, everything's perfect for me. I'm hoping that we'll get divorced around year 5, right? Nobody thinks that, right? So what I want you to hear is not Kent sitting here saying something to make you feel judged and to make you feel condemned and guilty. I'm trying to describe some of what happens to this. And my guess is if you were really honest, you would step back and you'd go, yeah, if there was any way to have it be different, I would have had it be different. It's not what I wanted for my relationship. Now, it is what it is, and so there's no point in beating that and trying to make you feel bad or anything. I don't want to do that. That's not my goal. But I do want us to look at it and just be honest. Sometimes you can come out of a scenario and you can withhold looking at what actually happened because it's painful. And I want you to know it's okay today to let some of that pain seep through and to let God bring some healing to you. Is that okay, everybody? So everybody, okay. So here's what I think some of the reasons why divorce is painful. It's because divorce is never as simplistic as people want to make it out to be. Those ladies on Facebook groups, they think it's just a quick solution for their problem. And I know there are some really deep reasons to get a divorce. So I'm not saying like, but Kent, what about X, Y, and Z? I'm talking about the people who are, it's just like, things aren't working. He's not who I thought he was. Because you guys, we've talked about this before, you know that people lie about who they are for like the first year or two to make you feel like they're really nice and that they're somebody that you would want to love. And so they get into these positions. And here's the problem. It is always hurtful and harmful in some form. It just is. And I think anybody who's gone through divorce would say, yes, it was hurtful. It was harmful. It hurt me. It hurt them. It hurt our kids. It was hard. It wasn't easy. It hurt us financially. It hurt me relationally. For years, I've had a hard time going into new relationships and building trust and all those kinds of things because it is a hard thing to go through. And the reason I'm bringing all this up is I feel like in our culture, if somebody doesn't say, it's not just the easy, quick fix that you think it is, you will think it is an easy, quick fix, and you'll go to that first instead of going to the hard things. Because it's hard to make a marriage work. And here's what I've also found, that most of the time, I don't know that, maybe that's even a little harsh most of the time, but the children are the ones who bear the burden of those pains. What I mean is this, years ago, I had this couple come to me, and they said, Kent, we feel like we've tried to work it all out, like we've done everything we can. I asked them, like, have you done these things? Well, no, we haven't done those, but we've tried, And I was like, okay, well, I try to be a little bit careful about not giving myself to any of those situations. I try to take a neutral ground, and I said, well, tell me why you want to do this. And they said, well, we want to get divorced because we think it'll be easier for our kids. I said, easier for your kids? And they said, yeah. They won't have to hear us fighting all the time. They won't hear us like arguing all the time and bickering, and they won't live with that insecurity. And I said, you do realize that the fight doesn't go away when you get a divorce. The fight goes to your kids. And all of a sudden, your spouse is talking bad about you to the kid, and then your kid feels like they have to defend you or they have to stand up for you. And then you come over and you're trying to be good, and you don't want to fight, and you don't want to downplay the spouse, but you feel like you need to because you need to protect your honor. And some of you have lived in the middle of that where the fight went to you. It left your parents, and they were all living their life, and you struggled with it. And you lived it. And I need us all to hear today that while divorce seems like a quick, easy thing, there's billboards around town that are like, quick divorce, call me, I'll give it to you for $80 or whatever. Like, it is not as easy and as painless as the world would want you to believe. It is a hurtful, terrible thing. And I've not met at least any divorced person who would say, yeah, I would have chosen that beforehand if I'd have known. Now, they may still would have chosen to get divorced because the situation they were in dictated that, but I think most of them would have said, I didn't want it. I didn't want it. So I was thinking about this. We kind of looked at the problem of the pain of divorce, and we've looked at, like, I've built up this question of how do you divorce-proof your marriage, and I started looking at Scripture for the sermon. And there's passages where God says that he hates divorce, right? And there's other passages about divorce that are all throughout the Scripture, but I thought, why don't we go to the guy who I think speaks the most powerfully about anything that whenever he speaks. So I want to take you to Jesus. We're going to be in Matthew chapter 19. If you want to get your Bibles open to there, we'll be getting to Matthew chapter 19. If you don't have a Bible, you should be on our bulletin. You should be able to scan the little scan code and download the YouVersion app for free. It has tons of Bible translations and Bible plans for reading, all kinds. It's super fantastic. Get that if you would. But we're going to be in Matthew 19. Now I need to tell you this is kind of the context of Jesus' ministry. He is crossing over the Jordan River. He's coming over the Jordan, and as he's doing that, he's been healing people, he's been teaching, and large crowds are starting to follow him. Like, he is disrupting the whole system. He's disrupting the religious leaders and power authorities and structures. And so what we find is that the religious leaders and power authorities and structures start to come against Jesus. And they're going to come to him, and they're going to ask him this question, because their whole religious experience was based around law. Okay, so they had laws, and it was basically, if you're good and you do the right things, you get to be with God. If you're bad and you do the wrong things, you're out. Okay, makes sense to you? Some of you grew up in religious systems like that. And this is what they do. They come and they ask Jesus this question. Jesus, is it okay to divorce your wife for any and all reasons? Any and all reasons. So here we go. Let's jump into it. This is Jesus' answer. Matthew 19:4-6. Haven't you read? He replied. That at the beginning, the Creator made them male and female and said, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. Now, if you remember, the last couple weeks, we've been talking about how, biblically speaking, the theology of marriage, marrying two things together, right? Remember, like, we talked about a really fantastic woodworker who marries two pieces of wood together? The actual definition of marriage is not a wedding ceremony, but it is this idea that couples are married when they become one flesh. Now, let me tell you, that is not what makes a good marriage, okay? So just because you have been married to somebody, to their body and your body, and you've become one flesh, it does not mean that makes a good marriage to just go out, have, you know, do things with people. I don't know if there's kids in here or not. I don't know if we had the PG posters out. So if God put someone together, who could separate that? Jesus is asking a very real basic question, right? If God is the one who's put them together, then who in the world has the right to separate them? Who has, and so this is a, like, Jesus is asking a pretty important question here, and I want you to listen what they say. Why then, they say, they asked, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? Now, what you need to know about this is that Moses gave men, and only men, permission to divorce their wives and send them away if she became displeasing to her husband. Now, some of you husbands are like, I might go become Jewish. Like, that sounds really like, because you see what it does, right? Who does it put in the power structure? Who? The man, right? If you're a woman in here, you're going, I don't like that. Like, that takes all the power away from the woman, because what Moses had said to them was, if your wife becomes displeasing to you, and the reason the religious leaders are asking Jesus this question is because there had been some religious leaders who were taking this passage and they were saying, well, what does the word displeasing mean? If she burns my toast? How many of you love a good slice of toast? Like, oh, come on, man. She burns your toast. Can you put her out and give her a divorce? There were some people who said, yeah. If she has become displeasing to you. And do you know what this did? Was it set up this power dynamic where women in this culture, so in our world, a woman gets divorced, a lot of times, actually, they can sometimes be even financially a little bit more stable. Right? Our world, like, a lot of times the children will go with the wife. Our world kind of favors the wife in this scenario. But in Jesus' time period, that wasn't how it worked. What happened to the wife, the woman, was she was put out. It was almost like having a scarlet letter kind of thing. Like, people wouldn't accept her. The best way to think about it is, you guys know who the Taliban are, right? Remember them, like 9/11, all that stuff. Like, imagine a woman in the Taliban getting divorced and put out. There's a chance that even her own children would shame her and would walk away from her. And what would happen in this time period, in Jesus' day and age, was if a woman was divorced, she was put out, she would be shamed, she would be left in disgrace, even her own family might walk away from her. And what would happen was, she had only a few means of supporting herself. One was to sell her body to other people. This is a big deal. The other one was for her to beg, or possibly, if her children hadn't put her out and hadn't shamed her, maybe they would take care of her. But really, what is happening is, in the system, the woman is left to nothing. And I want you to hear for a moment Jesus' answer, and how Jesus, it's crazy to me that people don't see this about Jesus. He elevates people whose status are de-elevated. So Jesus is going to elevate women in a way that nobody in his time and his culture ever would. Jesus is about to elevate them. So listen to what his reply is. Jesus replied, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. That's why he permitted it. Because God, from the beginning, his created order and his intent was that we would come together, we would unify. This is why you should wait and to do those things until this is a person that you're willing to commit the rest of your life to, because God intended for us to come together into one flesh and to stay unified with that person. And he says, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. But it was not this way from the beginning. It wasn't the way God created it. As a matter of fact, you should underline, if you have a physical Bible and you have a pen, you should underline, permitted divorce because hearts were hard. Because their hearts were hard. That's why he permitted it. So listen to this. As you kind of think about it and study it, as I studied it and dug into what does Jesus mean? What is he saying by that? This is what I think he's saying. That they cared more about their own happiness than the wholeness of their relationship. Did you hear that? You burn my toast, you're out. Who is that all about? Me, right? You chew too loud! Would you just like close your mouth when you chew? Who is that about? Me. You tuck the sheets. Me. Why did he permit divorce? It wasn't because it's how God intended and what he wanted. It was because their hearts were hard. Because they were looking for, and I want you to get this, for their own happiness rather than the wholeness of their relationship. Listen to me on this. Divorce was never the heart of God. He didn't create us to be divorced. He created us to come together in this beautiful union and for it to be wonderful. And some of you have found that and experienced that even after divorce. I'm telling you, this is not like the unforgivable sin or something. There's some churches that kind of handle that way. That's not the point of this. There's some people who've come out of divorce, found really powerful, good relationships, and like you look at them and you're like, I want that in my life now. And they probably would have things that they'd say, yeah, this is stuff that I learned from my previous relationship. But I'm telling you, divorce was never the heart of God. It was never the heart of God. Listen, I'm going to say this again because I think this is so key for Americans, and probably not every culture, but Americans need to hear this, that God is not after your happiness. Did you know that? That's not like the primary thing that he wants is for you to be happy. Like, but that's what everybody, there's books about how to get happiness. There's apps right now that you can download that promise if you look at your screen for so much time every day, this app will make you happy. I will promise you this, if you're looking at your screen for more time, it's probably not going to make you happy, right? But that's what they'll promise, is that the whole world is about your happiness. And this is how people come into relationships, is it's about my happiness. It's what I want. You know, when we seek a spouse, when you're dating somebody, what are you looking for? I want to find somebody that fits who? Me. I want to find somebody who fits me. Nobody. And guess what? It doesn't really change. As your relationship matures, if you're not careful, you'll continue to go, well, they don't fit me. They don't fit me. He thinks he's funny and he's not. He wants to tuck and I want, or he wants to untuck and I want to tuck. He squeezes from the middle, I squeeze from the bottom. I don't squeeze bottoms though, all right? So, God, listen, he's not after your happiness. So what is he after? Go back to that slide real quick, Tyler, sorry. God is after your spouse's and yours holiness and wholeness. Do you know that's what God cares about? Sometimes I think he will even allow us to go through things that are not things that we would have chosen for ourselves. But he wants to draw you into a deeper relationship with him. If you want to think about the word holiness, I think the best way in modern American terms, because most of us don't understand it, when we hear holy, we think of that church lady who's like, yeah, you don't do that, and you don't do this, and you don't do that, right? But that's what holiness is, not this prude person who you're like, I don't want that, I don't want to be that. Holiness is this person who is whole. They have dropped all of their ego and all of their motives that are dirty and about themselves and are all about them being like getting everything that they want. It's all about me, 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 me. And the whole person is somebody who realizes that God is the only one who can give that stuff to them. And they have found this holiness in him where they don't have to get that from their spouse. It doesn't mean spouses shouldn't care about each other. So always when I'm preaching this stuff, don't hear me saying stuff that I'm not. Doesn't mean you shouldn't care, that you shouldn't give yourself to your spouse, but what it means is you can't find that in them. Your spouse cannot make you whole. So listen, God is not after you having an easy, perfect, no problem marriage. He's not. And if that's what you thought it was going to be, you're sorely mistaken, because God is after you becoming a holy individual who is sanctified through marriage. Marriage, I've said this for a long time. I found out that the more relationships I have in my life, the more my selfishness meter has to go down. So when Jenny and I got married, if I kept my Kent selfishness meter at 100 like it was, because I was probably one of the most selfish people you've ever met, if I had kept it there, our relationship would have exploded by now. And then when we had a kid, guess what? My selfishness meter had to go down again. And then when we had another kid, I'm so stupid, I didn't learn this till we like got four in. Like I was like, oh man, because every time I had to give up some of myself, I had to sacrifice a little bit more in order to keep a relationship and love and do those things that really mattered. And because what I found is God is after me becoming holy or whole, for those of you who need that, individuals who are sanctified through marriage. And sanctification is this idea that you're just becoming more like Jesus. Now, I need to tell you, if you're going to become more like Jesus, there's a lot of people who would say, I want to be like Jesus, and they don't really mean it, right? Because you know what Jesus did. Like, let's just take one little snippet from his life real quick, okay? So Jesus is going to die. All right, he knows he's going to die. He wants to have one last dinner with his buddies before he dies, right? There's no Texas Roadhouse, or there's no Malone's. You can't go out and get a really good steak or something. So they're going to have to eat together. So you know what Jesus does the night before he's going to die? Remember, he is God of the universe shoved into flesh. So what does he do this night before he's going to die, before he's going to sacrifice his life for the whole world? What does he do? You remember this, right? He says to Peter, go out and butcher some chickens and a turkey. And then Andrew, I want you. You're going to be cooking that. And then James, I need you to, you're on wine service tonight and you're going to serve. I'm just going to sit here and you boys start bringing stuff to me. I would like five different courses to my meal. I need you guys to bring me stuff and take care of me. Would one of you just give me a manicure? I don't want my fingers looking terrible while I'm on the cross, right? Well, that's not what he did. You remember what he did? He the night before he dies, God of the universe stands up. He takes off his outer robe. He puts a towel around his waist, and he begins to wash dirty, gross fishermen feet. He is going to die for them, and he is serving them in this moment. Like, they should have been serving him, right? But you know what he says? I'm doing this so that you'll learn from my example, that you'll realize there's no student who's greater than their master. This is what is required of you if you're going to be a leader in my world. Listen, as long as you can hold on to some illusion, marriage is about being happy instead of being holy and helping your spouse be holy, your heart will always be progressing towards hard-heartedness. You will, because you will continue to make it about me. Me, 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 me. They're not meeting my needs. They're not doing what I want. They're not. And you won't be looking at what am I not. Now, that doesn't mean that things don't need to change for them. I was thinking about this. Did anybody grow up in a church where they would talk about how men are supposed to be the spiritual leaders of their family? Did anybody grow up in a church like that? Have you heard that before, maybe? Okay, does anybody know what that means? Robbie's got to get pastors. Come on, man. Come on, Robbie. I remember for years hearing pastors say that. I'd be like, okay, I'm going to have to be the spiritual leader of my house. What does that mean? Does that mean I need to make every decision? Well, no, it doesn't mean that. What does it mean? Does it mean that she needs to run everything by me before she does anything? Well, it doesn't really mean that. You know where I've kind of settled on this? Where I've settled on this is that it's my job to make sure that my wife and my children go to heaven. It's my job. I think my friend Matt over here was the one that actually told me that years ago. He's like, don't point at me, Ken. I don't want to talk to people. Everybody go talk to Matt. He'll hate my guts forever after that. But it's my job to make sure that my wife and my children go to heaven. And so what that means is what Paul said, like, husband should love his wife like Christ loved the church. Christ loved the church by dying for her, sacrificing himself for her. And so here I am as a man trying to force my wife into these molds that I've wanted her to fit in, and I'm not dying for her. I'm not giving myself away for my children, showing them what it looks like to have a passionate, God-honoring love of Jesus in my life. That starts to get me to say, I need to move away from hard-heartedness and into wholeheartedness. So let me ask this question, because remember, I told you, this isn't a sermon about five different things that you can do. This is really like the primer. This is to get you started on the path. Not Kent's going to tell you how to walk the path every single day of your life, because I'm not God. And any pastor who claims that they can tell you that kind of stuff, they're taking their role and their place in this life a little bit too far. So how do you unharden a heart? How do you do that? Can I tell you the only way I know personally? God, speaking through Ezekiel, is talking about a day that will come far off. Ezekiel himself will never see this, but it is a day that's going to come, and it's a day that you and I live in because of the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross. And this is what he says, verse 25, Ezekiel 36, 25 and following. He says, I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. I will give you a new heart, and I will put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. So earlier when I was asking you about who are you trying to fulfill, who are you trying to please, the word was me, right? You notice how God and all of this, there's no, you're not doing much, right? I will sprinkle. I will cleanse. I will give. I will remove. I will put my spirit. And then what will you do after he has done all of this? Then you're going to follow him. This is a total, unhardening your heart only occurs by the power of the Spirit of God moving in you. You cannot facilitate this on your own. You can't make it happen on your own. You can't be like, well, I'm just going to be a better husband then. Or I'm going to just be a better wife then. Because trying to follow like five or six steps and I'm going to force myself to do these and create new habits, it's not going to work. Because your heart is still directed at you. It is about letting you, like giving up the ghost and letting God start to do some real work in him. The scripture says that if you seek him with all your heart, that he'll be found. See, this is not about five different steps to you becoming a perfect husband or a perfect wife. This is a complete refocusing of your life on God and his person, letting him work in you, and you humbly saying, I'm going to stop having everything be about me, because it's not. It's not. We're going to be talking about some of this stuff in the weeks to come, but it's like when people say, I just want to know what God's plan for my life is, and it's such an arrogant question. Right? Like, why aren't you asking God what his plan is instead of it all being about you? Even in those places, it sneaks in. And so if you don't refocus your heart and your life on God and his person, it is not about what you can do. It's about what you focus on. It's about shifting your entire perspective to be about him. I want to be whole in you, Jesus. I want to have you come in and restore places and change me. It is not about just being at church on Sunday and I've checked all these boxes. Sundays are so much more about Mondays. Did you know that? It's about you taking it and you living for Jesus every single day of your life, letting him refocus your heart and as you become whole. So early on, in my marriage, I'm a pastor, if you didn't know that. And there is this pressure on pastors that I fell very much, fell into a trap early on in my ministry. I've since passed this a little bit, but is that there's this expectation on pastors that you're going to have it all together, right? So it's hard to come in. I now tell my wife when I'm doing a relationship series, I used to not do that, and we'd have the craziest fights when I'd be doing a relationship series. And it was like, you know why? I think Satan knew it'd be really hard for me to get up and preach about how great marriage is when I hate it, right? And so now we talk about it. I never hated it, baby. I love being married. She's shaking her head at me like, you're such a dog, Kent. She really is an amazing woman. So she puts up with me. So early on in our marriage, I would sometimes, if I'm really being honest, we would have a fight or something, and I would go to her, and I would apologize because I knew that's the right thing to do because I'm a pastor. And so I'd come and I'd be like, baby, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have done this and said that. I'm really sorry. And I was always, if I'm really honest with you, I was apologizing to try to get her to apologize, right? And so I would say that. I'd say all that. I'm really sorry. And then she would say, okay, I forgive you. And I'd be like, what? Like, you forget, like, she never saw this. It was all internal, but that's what, I'm like, you forgive me? Are you, I need to be forgiving you is what I'm thinking. I'm like, okay, well, thank you. We'll try this again later. And I would keep trying it because I was trying to manipulate her to make her who I wanted her to be. And I would pray about it. God, can you just please help Jenny? She's got so many problems. And God is super gracious and he's kind when you're an arrogant little punk like I was. And he kind of was like, Kent, why don't you worry about yourself? Because I'm working in Jenny's life and you're trying to work there too. And I really want to be working in your life. I want to be bringing you to wholeness. I'm not saying you shouldn't work on your marriage and you shouldn't talk about things. And if you have problems, it's important to learn to have communication. That was one of those big three. Remember that I talked about earlier? What I'm saying is most of us are coming to the relationship and those problems and those issues, and we don't really care at all about the other person as long as we get what we want. And what I found was that God needed to chip off some arrogance in me. And God needed me to say, Kent, I need, when you say that you're sorry to her, that you're really sorry. You're not just trying to manipulate her. See, if we want to divorce-proof our marriages, it's going to take unhardening our hearts, and you can't do it on your own. You need the Spirit of God speaking into your life and changing. You need to be focusing on him. I promise you, I would not be in the ministry and I would not be married if it had not been for Jesus. I promise you. But you know what? Now, I would say probably 90% of the time, we're pretty dang happy. But it's not because we try to be happy. It's because we're trying to be whole in Jesus. And I'm trying to serve her. And I'm trying to give my life away. And I stink at it a lot of times. Real honest. But she's super gracious and super kind to me. And she keeps coming back because she wants to be whole. And she wants to be holy with Jesus. And so happiness comes as this byproduct, but it was never the goal. And it still is not the goal. And I know there are going to be some terrible hard days ahead in our lives. But I know where my eyes are going to be. I used to tell my kids when they were learning to ride their bike that if you would look where you want to go, you'll go there. That's a lot of times the problem when a kid's learning to ride a bike, right? They're looking down. They're looking at where they're at, not where they want to go. I'm asking you today. Would you start looking where you want to go? Start becoming the kind of person that your husband or your wife would want to marry, would want to be with, and let God work in them. Let him deal with them on their holiness. Still have conversations, still communicate, still be good about all that, but stop trying to force them into a mold that's all about you. This morning, we're going to stand, we're going to worship, we're going to sing one more song. I love this song. I don't know how many of you are familiar with it, but it goes through from God creating and breathing life into things all the way to him coming after us to rescue us and how we could follow after him and become like him. And it is this beautiful picture as you listen and sing the song of how God is working his restoration as we turn our hearts toward him, the creator and author of all things, how he can work in us to restore all things. Yes, even your marriage that feels like it's on its last leg. He can restore it. It is not beyond him. So I'd like to pray as we close, and then we'll sing the song, and I invite you to join with us to stand and worship. There's communion over the side. There's places to leave your tithes and offering where you can put those in the boxes. This is time for you to do business with God. There will be people up here that you can come and talk to or come and kneel in prayer if you want to pray. This is real important that you start to focus your hearts and minds on him. You guys pray with me. Jesus, I pray for anybody in this room whose marriage is really suffering. They've just grown apart and they've gotten focused on all that life has and they've forgotten to just love each other. I pray that you'd help them to refocus their hearts on you, to let you define success in their life, let you define what is valuable to them in their life, let you be the one who shows them and walks them through gently like you did with me into a marriage that could have life in it, a life that has wholeness to it. Jesus, I pray for anybody in here who is far from you, who has never, who hasn't come back to you, who needs to make that decision today to be yours, to say, I want to be your disciple, Jesus, that today they would walk towards you, that they'd take any kind of step, whether it's coming up to talk to somebody, whether it's just coming forward to pray or sitting in their chair to pray, that God, they would take a step towards you, because I know about you that when we step towards you, you step back towards us. I love you, Jesus. I want to be all in with you. Help us to advance your kingdom, to live for you and to love people. It's in your name that I pray, Jesus. Amen. You guys stand and worship with us. This is your time to partake of communion and offering.